You're listening to WDCV 88.3 FM Carlisle, and this is the Bill Durden Show here at Dickinson College, Carlisle, Pennsylvania.
This is WDCV FM Carlisle, 88.3, Dickinson College Radio. Broadcasting from the heart of the Cumberland Valley. And now, live from Studio 118B, here's Dickinson College President Bill Durden.
Good evening. This is Bill Durden again, and we are on Halloween Eve, I guess you would say that. And I imagine there are not many listeners. You're probably all out gathering trick-or-treats, but nevertheless, there are some people probably have already been out or going out later. Alex, we have a very interesting program tonight. We're going to look at ghosts and probably some issues related to Halloween. Are you ready for that?
Oh, I'm ready. It sounds exciting.
Are you trick-or-treating?
Oh, I got mine out of the way this weekend.
Well done. Well done. I have three guests. First, Jim Gerenzer, a librarian, Archives and Special Collections. Jim, welcome.
Thank you.
And then also, Mike Andre. You are class of 05, and... So you're also an alumnus of this fine institution.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well done. And then we also have with us, let me just see here, we have another fine guest, and that is, the guest is, don't go away, that is Jessica Hustler.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Great. Okay. Now, Alex, let me ask you this. What do you know about Halloween? Where did Halloween come from? What is it?
Well, it's originally a druidic holiday, right?
Good grief. That's excellent. Go on.
It was celebrating the change of the seasons, I think, maybe?
Yes. That's close. I'll tell you, you are a true scholar. All right, you ready for this? I'm just going to quote a little bit, of course, off the web about what Halloween is, because it will, which doesn't mean this is necessarily accurate. Correct, Jim? As a fine librarian.
It depends what site you used. If you used Wikipedia, we might have issues.
We might have issues, indeed. Well, that was not it. But let me give you this and see, because it will get around ghosts, the issue. What we know as Halloween is a name applied by the ancient Celts to the evening preceding All Saints' Day, or the Christian feast of Hallowmas. Notice Halloween, Hallowmas. I can see these fine alums and friends here absolutely perceive the connection. Observance of this day originated among ancient druids. Did you hear that, Ox?
So I did.
Oh, yes. Who believed that on that evening, Samar and the Lord of the Dead called forth hosts of evil spirits or ghosts. There we are, ghosts. The druids would ignite massive fires in an effort to ward off these ghosts. It is also believed that the ghosts would traditionally visit their earthly homes on that night. So as to appease the ghosts, treats were placed outside of the home in an effort to protect it from evil forces. Did you know that?
No, I did not.
I did not.
Yeah, I'll tell you, what a learning environment this is. All right. Now, here's just a little bit more. And this gets us into Alex's part, but also a little bit more about what's going on with Halloween. All right. According to what can be reconstructed of the beliefs of the ancient Celts, the bright half of the year ended around November 1. That would be tomorrow, correct? All right. Or on a moon phase near that date, a day referred to in modern Gaelic as Sonin, or alternatively Savin, meaning end of summer. After the adoption of the Roman calendar with its fixed months, the date began to be celebrated independently of the moon's phases. As October 21st is the last day of the bright half of the year, the next day also meant the beginning of winter, which the Celts often associated with human death. Aha! All right. And with the slaughter of livestock to provide meat for the coming winter. So there was animal death. All right. The Celts also believed that on October 31st, that would be today, all right, the boundary separating the dead from the living became blurred. Aha! Now we're getting into some ghost-like things here. The rich and unusual myth system at work here. The spirit world, the residence of the Sidae, as well as of the dead, was accessible through burial mounds. These mounds opened at two times during the year, making the beginning and end of summer highly spiritually resonant. Finally, the Celts' survival during the cold, harsh period depended on the prophecies of their priests and priestesses, the Druids, and the accurate prediction of how much food would be needed to sustain the people before the next harvest. They believed that the presence of spirits would aid in the ability to make predictions about the coming year. So lighting of bonfires and reinforcements of boundaries were specifically meant to keep malicious spirits or ghosts from threatening the community. Alex, what do you think about that?
That's a lot of information.
That's a heck of a lot of information. But we can see it all. We have ghosts, we have death, we have change of season, light, dark. We have Halamas, the religious celebration, All Saints Day. We have the night when the evil spirits play before the religious holiday. So this is the night when it all comes out. My goodness, unbelievable. Okay. Now, let us proceed to look at some people who believe that they have had encounters with ghosts. Now, have you had these encounters? And let's see now. Have you both had encounters, Mike and Jessica, have you both had encounters with the same ghosts?
Yeah, at a restaurant that both of us worked at in town while I was going to school, and before I worked there, she had worked there.
Oh, this is good. Now, before we get into this, I want to say, Mike, that you are a native of Hellerton, Pennsylvania.
Yes.
You graduated Dickinson in 2005. Mm-hmm. You majored in environmental science, and now you're an employee of the Susquehanna River Basin Commission.
That's
and
correct.
You're a wastewater technologist.
Water quality.
Water quality.
Yeah.
Okay, very good. And we'll get into what some of that is. But you also played as an outside linebacker and defensive end of the football team.
That's correct.
What do you think about their performance this year?
They look really good. I'm excited to go see them.
Oh, how about the game this weekend?
I wish I could have been there. I didn't get to see it.
And how about the one coming up?
I can't wait. I'm very excited. I wish I could have been there to see them beat Hampton Sydney.
Yeah, that was really good. Now, guess what I got for everybody for the game coming up? The first announcement over the year. You ready for this?
Sure.
Everybody gets a red and white pom-pom.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, this is really something. We're over the top on this. We are really going to flash it over there at those Gettysburg folks. You know what I mean? This is going to be great. Okay. And Jessica, you're a native of Carlisle. You attended HAC, Harrisburg Area Community College, where you studied accounting.
Yes.
And you have a variety of retail jobs. You've done some waitressing, and you waitressed in a Cumberland County restaurant for 2 years. But now you're actually, for 2 years, you're a nanny to a local physician.
I am.
And you have care for 3 children, ages 2, 5, and 9 years old.
That's right.
Where are they now?
They are getting ready to go trick-or-treat.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Okay, good. So, now let's get into this. What exactly did you see? And you can both get at this, however you want to do this.
Well, I'll tell you, I started working there when the building had been vacant for quite a few years, I know. And then some people that I'm also friends with had bought the place.
And is it an old place?
It is. I actually, the building has been there since the late 1790s. So
1790s,
it's,
okay.
It's in the historic district of Carlisle, and it has a lot of history behind it.
Okay.
But I started working there from the day they opened, and, you know, it was kind of hearsay at first, kind of, you know, people before had heard this. And
now, did they tell you, fellow workers, did they tell you away
no,
about this?
No,
not right.
at all.
No, no.
Not
okay.
at all.
All right.
No. I wish I would have had the warning, but no.
Okay.
And I guess I could say kind of silly things happened at first. You know, at night, I always opened and I closed the restaurant almost every day. But every night we would set the tables with, you know, each of them had a candle on that we would light for dinner, and each of them had a teacup and silverware and everything. And it was nothing for me to come back in the morning to open up and there would be, you know, candles lit, and numerous times teacups would be flipped up on just half of the restaurant, perfectly half. And this is something that I did every night myself. And things like that would happen.
You were the first person back in the restaurant in the morning.
Yeah. I know, it doesn't sound very smart.
No, hold on. And you were the last person definitely to go in the evening.
I wasn't there by myself either times. But when it came to setting up the tables and stuff like that, it was my duty to do those things.
All right, we're with you. Okay.
So that was definitely my responsibility.
All right.
And somebody messed with it overnight.
All right.
But things like that would happen. I mean, I found silverware in places, you know, all of the spoons would be on one table and things like that. And to be honest with you, that, I mean, it didn't give me too much of an eerie feeling. It was just kind of like, maybe, you know, I believe some of the things that I had heard, let's say. But I actually didn't really believe in anything until I saw the owner the one day, and he is a big man, a gruff man, a man that wouldn't scare easy. And I saw him come out of the basement, and he was as white as a ghost, looked like he was, I mean, just in another world, and his hair was standing up all over his body.
So this was the first...
This was the first,
first time you experienced that might be a ghost.
Yes, that I really believed, like, okay,
is that what
this
he said
is
he
serious.
Came up? What did he say when he came up?
He didn't say anything, no. And he is not a man of few words. He usually has a lot to say, by any means. He usually has something to say about everything. Mm-hmm. And it was in the middle of a dinner rush, and I had just happened to be in the back, and he came up the stairs and I saw him, and he grabbed his wife, and he pulled her into the other room, and then I had to go about my business. And then later that night, she had told me that he had been down in the basement and turned around and like actually saw a man's face and his body. And that definitely shook all of us up in the restaurant, because like I said, this man isn't somebody that is just going to, you know, do it for a joke or, you know, is even really the joking kind. I mean, he was a very business, you know, gruff
and
man.
Can you describe this figure?
Oh, he said that he was in somewhat of a soldier's outfit. And it was a man. He knew it was a man. And that was about it, that it was a man in a soldier's outfit.
Okay, now what about or maybe you've had this experience, Mike. Did you actually see this?
Well, I hadn't had any experience like that, but without even hearing any of the stories, I know that one of my jobs at the end of the night was to go down in the basement and go in the walk-in cooler and fill all the stuff up that we had used the night before so the next day when they open up, they'd have everything they needed. And I knew something was a little funny when I first started working there, and none of the women would go down in the basement. They'd always send me down there. And even if I asked someone to go down and help me, none of them would go. So I started wondering, you know, what was going on. And finally I asked one of the other guys that worked there, why are the women afraid to go down in the basement? And he started telling me about the stories and stuff like that. It's a lot of the stuff that Jess had just told you. Mm-hmm. And then I talked to the owner one night and really got a couple stories out of him that had happened personally to him that kind of made me into a believer too. Because like she said, these people are very business-oriented people. They're very religious. They go to church every Sunday. And stuff like that. And when he started telling me about it and the way he was telling me, I knew that he wasn't making it up, that at least he had thought that he had had one of those kind of experiences.
Okay. So, yeah, but did you ever see it in all your times down there?
I had never seen it, but I had been down in that basement many times, and I can tell you that when I used to walk down there, and as soon as my head would get underneath the steps, I'd look at the back of the room, and I always felt like there was someone down there. And when I'd go pick the stuff up in the cooler and take it back upstairs, I'd look over my shoulder because I felt like somebody was behind me. So I never really saw anything, but I always had that eerie kind of that feeling down there. And you can't really help but get that when you're in that basement because it is so old.
And maybe just to get a visual, this basement, like I said, the building has been around since the 1790s. And when you walk down into the basement, I mean, it was... To get down there, the stairs were just a hole in the floor, and it was only about 4 or 5 stairs that led down to it, and you definitely had to duck underneath the floor to get down there. But once you were down there, I mean, the ceiling was probably only 5 foot tall, maybe, mm-hmm. And the wall on the left side was open about 2 feet. It was just all stone, and it was probably, I would say, maybe 25, 30 feet long of this narrow hallway that was only about 3 or 4 feet wide and had a gap that was about 2 foot that at the top of the wall on the left side, and then this side was all old stone. The right side was all old stone, and it led back. It was dirt. It led back to this walk-in cooler that has been there for, I mean, I'm obviously not since the 1790s, but I mean, has been there for a very long time. It was built into the wall, and just a very, very old and different rooms. Like, you'd have to go, you could walk around, kind of, and there was another big room off to your right, but it was definitely separated. And it was just very, it was a very eerie place
to
be.
So you have an atmosphere which invites
yes.
Scary sort of situations. You have a very old building. You have history in the building.
Yes.
Now, let's just skip a little, though. You had an experience, Mike, a personal experience in your family. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. One summer I was working with my grandfather, who's a stonemason. I went to labor for him for the summer. Mm-hmm. And I had to stay up there. I'd stay there for 4 days during the week, and then I'd come home on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday and stay with my parents. But it didn't last too long because my mom had always told me growing up when we were younger that that house that they grew up with was haunted, that mm-hmm. there were spirits there, and that that they'd had priests come there and exorcise the house. Both my grandparents are very religious. My grandmother was from Romania. My grandfather was from Italy. Mm-hmm. And they lived in Brazil for a short while. And my grandmother was into voodoo and stuff like that. So I don't know if that had anything to do with her inviting some of those spirits into the house. But I used to sleep there at night up in my uncle's old bedroom. And a couple times in the middle of the night, I'd been woken up by what sounded like somebody running up and down the stairs. And I'm a very heavy sleeper. Me and her went out to San Diego after I graduated college, and I slept through a small earthquake there. Mm-hmm. And the sound on the stairs was enough to wake me up out of my sleep and scare me enough to call my mom one night and ask her what was going on. And finally, she told me about some of the history of the house and some of the stuff that happened. And I started thinking about it, putting two and two together, and that's when I really started to get scared.
Now, you had a similar experience, too, somebody else's house.
Yeah, I was, and it's the only other ghost experience that I've ever had besides from at that restaurant, and it was the same feeling. And I had just been standing outside. We had grilled out earlier in the day, and I was outside by myself throwing some hot dogs on the grill or something. And it was, you know, a cool evening. But all of a sudden, I heard a whoosh, and I could feel it. I could feel something. And it really creeped me out. Like, it creeped me out. Enough that I went inside, and I had said something to my friend later on. I had said, you know, something really weird happened to me, you know. And she had said, well, that's funny because her uncle had just died recently, young, of cancer. And they thought they had felt his presence in the house also. There had been a couple of occasions that they had thought that they had had some kind of spiritual connection to him.
So you're both willing to entertain the fact that there might be these spirits?
Yes.
Yeah.
I definitely am.
Okay. Jim, you are an archivist.
I am an archivist.
Indeed. And we hear over the years, and like to hear a little bit about this, that the college is inhabited by some ghosts. Now, what do we make of all this? What could you tell us a few of the ghosts that have allegedly are and have been about? I guess they haven't been. They're still here. If they're, I mean, you know. Well, I guess they could be encouraged to leave. but did you tell us a little bit about this. What's going on this campus?
Well, when I was a student, I had never heard any particular stories about ghosts being on campus. But when I started working in the archives, I started noticing every once in a while students would come in investigating things that they had heard about. So I started to pick up little bits here and there from what students were looking into. And then I taught a first-year seminar a few years ago, and the students told me that there was an actual ghost tour as part of the first-year orientation, and they started telling me some of the things that they were told during that orientation. And some of the stories included that a student had died in Montgomery Hall, where theater and dance department is right. located now, right. and that there was a room on the third floor that had been sealed off after a student had died at the request of the parents of that student. There was a story about the admissions house, that there had been a death in, yes. in that household.
I've heard that one.
There was one about a death in the quads. And the students had told me the way they heard it, it was in quad five, which isn't actually true. So I heard lots of bits and pieces, but that one time when I had a classroom of first-year students was the first time I heard a bunch of them say, well, this is what...
And they were delivering these ghosts to you from their first year. They just arrived, and they're hearing this from others.
From upperclassmen, basically, okay. who were giving the tours.
All right.
So I wasn't sure where the first-year students were or where the upperclassmen were actually getting their information from. But with ghost stories, there are often things that just get passed down year after year after year. Perhaps, you know, the admissions tour guides hear things because they certainly hear a lot about college folklore as well. And they work in one of the potentially haunted places.
What about Old West? Because we've had requests from students they wanted to stay in Old West all night, which we've granted, but they never showed up. I mean, yeah. But that they wanted to stay in Old West all night to see if anything.
For West and East, they both make sense to me as potential ghost sites, especially given the Civil War relationship,
right.
and the buildings being used as hospital facilities following the Battle of Gettysburg. So those seem like optimum possibilities for something being tied in. Okay. But I haven't heard of any particular.
What about the horsemen going across the moorland area?
You know, the only reference I've been able to find about that is that one little sentence in Charles Coleman Sellers' history of the college, which he just sort of throws it in there in talking about the Benjamin Rush campus and Baird Hall, which had been located where Whitwer Hall is now, and just sort of throws in there. And there's this story about former President John Mitchell Mason riding his carriage through that area on his way to campus. What fascinates me about that story is the fact that John Mitchell Mason didn't even die here in Carlisle. He was president for a number of years, then retired and moved back to New York. So
he had a long journey.
If it's his spirit, he must have really liked the area. And after he finally passed away, he decided Carlisle was better than New York, and he moved back. But
well, now tell me, what do you make of all this? I mean, what are the more substantial ones that you have some story around? I mean, now our other two guests have clearly a targeted, at least in the restaurant case, a targeted place, someone who believes the owner that he's seen a soldier. All right. What do we know on campus? What has some legs?
I've never heard any personal accounts of what people have experienced. I only know where there were sites of accidents and problems. So the story about the admissions house, Abram Bosler, who owned that house, did commit suicide. In that house.
Okay.
Because he was distraught over financial losses during the Depression.
Right.
And so he felt that the insurance money would...
Do we know the actual room?
I know it was on the third floor. I don't know the exact
And of course, room. For years, we had the third floor blocked off. But we just opened it up.
Right. So it's easy for things to get passed from building to
building.
Reading
a story here, you see. Yes,
right,
yes,
and it's quite possible that there were things mixed up. That Montgomery House might have somehow gotten twisted, so the idea that there was a room sealed off in Montgomery House on the third floor could have actually been passed from the admissions house story.
Now, what do we know about Montgomery House? Anything happened there?
Nothing that I have discovered. I did find a newspaper article from the 1980s in which they were talking about ghosts in Carlisle and about the story of their supposedly being a room sealed off because there had been a student death on the third floor. And the dean of students at that time, Mary Carson, had said, no, actually, the reason this space was sealed off is because it wasn't up to code for housing students. And the rest of the building was being used as student housing. But she mentioned that not only Montgomery Hall, but there were two other houses on campus that for a number of years had to be sealed off just because they weren't up to code until the college could renovate those spaces and make them available again. And theater and dance has that space opened up again, so there is no closed space on the third floor of Montgomery.
How about Old West? Anything we can verify there? I mean, do we have the Buchanan ghost? Do we have the, Roger Tawney regretting his decision and wandering around wringing his hands with the Dred Scott? I mean, we have any of that going on?
Not that I've heard. No stories. Which surprises me. Old West, of all places, seems like the one that would generate the most stories. The most things have happened there. It's been around the longest, but I've never heard any tales associated with Old West.
How about the president's house? Because we've had, there have been deaths in the president's house, I believe. I think someone's sister died in there years ago. I have to check that, but I think it was one of the presidents, his sister.
I think that was his mother-in-law, Gilbert.
Mother-in-law, that's it, mother-in-law. And she died in there. But it wasn't a violent death or it wasn't anything else like that. And often it's a violent death.
Well, I think the first owner also died, John Reed, who began by teaching law in that house. I believe he passed away in that house in 1850.
I haven't met them recently.
Well, if you do start
our dog barks on occasion, That's right. Now, what the death, or the soldier who was in the basement of the restaurant. Do we have any story about him?
Yes.
Okay, what's that?
I have heard that he had been coming in. It was a restaurant, I guess, originally, and whenever this may have happened. And he had kept coming in and was an obnoxious drunk and would come in there and get drunk over and over again. And they kicked him out, and he would come back. So finally, they took him, and even if you go into the back of the restaurant and how it kind of intertwines with the other buildings, there are gaps in between, like little rooms in between the buildings. And they had taken him back there and beat him to death. And to go back to the ghost actually being seen, it is I only know of three people that have ever actually seen him.
And the description's the same?
Yes, exactly the same. And it's only ever men that have seen him. Only men. And I have felt the presence, but I...
What was that, a breeze or something?
No, down in the basement, like I said, that long walkway. And we never, this it all kind of came about whenever it had first opened up. And, I had been working there a lot. So going down in the basement didn't scare me away from going down there. So I would go down there numerous times a day. And, on random occasions, you would just be overcome with, like, a rage almost of something just pushing you out of there. Like, you're not supposed to be here. And if I would go, because the big walk-in, if I would go to fill something up as I would be leaving, it would be just a feeling of out, like, get out, get out, get out, get out, just pushing you out. I was constantly looking over my shoulder. Numerous occasions I actually ran out of the basement. Like, the stuff that had happened with the candles and the teacups, like I said, it kind of creeped me out, but didn't give me the eerie feeling of that I felt when I was down in the basement. There's nothing that I could even compare that feeling to, besides from my other experience at a friend's house. It is a very unique feeling.
Why do you think you didn't see this ghost? Why didn't the ghost reveal himself to you?
I'm not sure. Probably because I didn't give him time to.
Oh, all right.
I mean, I used to go down there. If I was down there and there was somebody else there with me, it wouldn't bother me as much. But I'm ashamed to admit it. When I used to go down there and pick some of that food up, I'd get my food and I'd get out of there because I didn't like staying down there at all. It was just a very, I don't know if it's the environment that's down there that makes it seem as real as there is, or if it really is a spirit that's down there. I don't know what to believe because I haven't seen it. I've just heard the stories, but there is something down there that creates this feeling that, you just don't belong there.
And like I said, the feeling, it wasn't every time that I went down there. It was just not even necessarily that. It was just certain times when I would be down there that I would get this feeling. I mean, I could walk down there 30 times and not even think about it or have any kind of feeling or anything. And then other times it would just be overwhelming.
Hmm. Here's I happen to go to, again, a website, a paranormal website. And there is one I went to, and the person has a very good sense of humor. But this is, here, are ghosts real? That's what a person asks, all right? And this is the answer. If I knew that, I would be writing a best-selling book, not maintaining this website. And the short answer is, nobody knows, all right? For a longer answer, he recommends going to several readings. One is called Ghost Sightings by Brian Indies. That's supposed to be a very good one if you want to read on ghost sightings, all right? But then he says, just an aside, but an important point I think needs to be made. Anyone who tells you that ghosts are definitely real is either lying or misguided. The fact is, there is no hard proof of ghosts, spirits, or anything like that. Let it be known that I don't disrespect the work of honest ghost hunters and paranormal investigators. Obviously, since I run a paranormal website, I do not completely discount the paranormal myself. What do you think about that? Must we actually have visualization to believe in this?
I don't think so at all.
Mm-hmm. Now, Jim, what are you thinking about
this? Well, there's an awful lot. I mean, maybe there isn't any actual concrete proof, but if you poll people generally, a lot of people will believe that there is something paranormal out there. And a lot of people will also believe that they have had some kind of personal experience. I mean, usually the reason they believe is they've had those feelings. They've been in a place. They've seen something that they can't explain. Including me. So,
including you too.
Yes.
My goodness, we got to get into that. We'll take a break and we'll be right back in a ghostly moment. Okay. Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I got to hear about it.
This is Anthony Hopkins with an important message about cancer prevention and treatment. While research continues for better ways to detect and treat cancer, there's one very important step I would ask you to consider right now, and that is to take a good look at your diet. New studies show that fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other high-fiber vegetarian foods can reduce the risk of certain cancers, and they may even help with survival. And there's more good news. A plant-based diet isn't just good for beating cancer. It can help protect against diabetes, heart disease, and obesity. For a free brochure and plenty of delicious recipes, please visit us on the web at www.cancerproject.org or call 866-906-WELL. This message is brought to you by the Cancer Project, a nonprofit organization advancing cancer prevention and survival through nutrition, education, and research.
Bill Durden, we're back. It's the night we discuss ghosts. We discuss Halloween. They're all related. It's the change of seasons. It's life, death. It's the wily characters versus more holy situations. And Jim Grenzer is with us, one of our guests, a librarian, archivist, a thoroughly rational sort. You say you have had some impossible encounters with things you thought were ghost-like.
Yes. On the lighter side, in the house that I grew up in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, there were lots of sounds and things that couldn't be explained. And so we, as a family, just sort of had a little fun with it. And we used to call our spirit George. And if there was something we couldn't explain away, we'd say, George did it, George did that. I'd be up late at night watching TV or something, and I'd hear banging on the walls, and I'd think, oh, it's my brother playing his rock music upstairs. And I'd go upstairs, and there's no sound at all.
Did you have an old house?
It wasn't that old. It only dated from the 1950s. So
you're sitting on earthquake fault.
I certainly hope not in the middle of Pennsylvania. But so that was something we easily sort of laughed off. But one that neither my parents nor I have ever been able to laugh off was when they both saw my spirit.
Your spirit?
My spirit.
Now
without
wait
my
a minute.
Body.
Tell me about this.
So we had taken a family trip to Florida, and right. I would have been about 8 years old.
Right.
And we were at St. Augustine, where they have the old Spanish fortress
yes,
there.
Yes.
And we had taken the guided tour. And so then we were in the gift shop, and I was still looking around, and my parents went out, and there's sort of a courtyard area in the middle of the fort, and they just sat on a bench in the middle of the courtyard waiting for me and my brother and sister to come out. And they were sitting there for a few minutes, and then they saw me come out of the gift shop and go skipping across the courtyard and into a solid stone wall. And they looked at each other, and they said, well, where did James go? Did he, you know, is there just an entryway we can't see there? So they both got up and walked over to the part of the wall where they saw me disappear, thinking maybe there was a hidden doorway or something like that. And there was no doorway. There was just solid wall. And while they were standing there, I came out of the gift shop and came right to where they were standing, followed that same path, skipping across the courtyard
very same
right
path
to where
for
they
the same
were.
Actions?
Right, because they were standing there. So I was going to them. And they were both rather dumbfounded about the whole thing. If it had just been my mother, my father would have said, you know, you were out in the sun too long or something like that. But he saw it too. And they didn't tell me anything right then and there, but they told me sometime years later about that incident. And when they told me, I had the most unbelievable sensation of deja vu that I've ever had in my life. And I could actually picture the entire scene as if from the outside. So that has always sort of spooked me, that whether it was my own spirit traipsing off for a little while or a spirit in the fortress that was pretending to be me for a little while, I don't know. Mm. But that is my own personal brush with a paranormal. Well,
Jessica or Mike, do you have any questions of Jim on this one? This is a truly real situation.
I'm still
situation.
In shock. I'm still, that would that would throw me for a loop.
Yeah.
I'm still kind of.
What happened? Do you remember feeling anything yourself at this moment?
Not at the original time that it happened, only about years later when I was told about. But as I said, my parents were spooked enough that they didn't tell me at the time. They waited.
But when you heard it again, you could put yourself back there
mm-hmm.
and see exactly your movements again. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, let me ask you this. Were they anxiously wondering where you and your brothers and sisters were? Were they waiting in an anxious way?
Probably not that anxious.
And you weren't coming out, you were in there a while?
Yeah, it wasn't like we had been
there.
So
there was no projection they might have had, kind of a neurological projection of your coming out.
I could see that from my mother, who would be the less patient of the two, but I wouldn't expect it from my father, who strikes me as the more rational.
Any questions,
Mike? I think that's my mom used to tell me all the time that how my grandfather's house, the house she grew up with, was haunted too. And I always kind of like, yeah, mom, you know, I don't really believe you. But I think when somebody that's close to you like that, so especially when it's your parents, tell you something like that, it makes it a lot more real for someone, even though you haven't seen it. Because your parents are someone that you grow up trusting and looking up to all your life. And for them not to tell you that for such a long time, it just makes you, they must have really believed that they saw you come out of there. And you know, I think that so a lot of people say ghosts don't exist and this and that. And I think sometimes the situation just kind of brings itself to a head, and you may think that you saw somewhere or you truly felt that you did. And when you have someone else tell you that, that's that close to you, it really puts it out there for you. Like,
yeah, this is very, I mean, you're right. Now, but let me ask you this. This is, I wonder what this is. This is, you said it was your spirit going ahead of you.
Maybe.
All right. But it's not
hey, you're not yet a ghost, but it's sort of a movement of, quote, the spirit. Mm-hmm. And obviously the spirit can go through walls. There's no, the material is not resistant to it. Well, you may be ghost material, Jim. you may have a proclivity to separate. This is great.
Well, then why haven't I felt the spirits on campus?
No, I know.
Trying to pick up the vibrations.
This is rather interesting. Now, I want to go back just a second to this. How do you tell if your house is haunted? Here's a question. This is a common question that's asked by listeners and viewers like you. How do you tell if your house is haunted?
I don't think that you, I mean, I think it would be hard for maybe somebody besides from your paranormal investigators or something like that to just look at a house and say, oh, that's haunted. I think it's a feeling. I completely believe in the energy. I mean, you can walk into a room, you know, into a funeral home, and, you know, you can sense without, you know, seeing everybody, how everyone's feeling and the energy. I completely believe in a feeling rather than seeing something or anything like that. I mean...
But how would you go about trying, like in your case, with the silverware moving all around, how would you go about, and you're thinking there's a ghost, both of you are thinking there's a ghost in the basement. Now, you had that one separation there, and I assume you've held together since then.
As far as I know.
All right, now, the issue is, how would you try to figure this out, whether this were real or not?
I mean, the issue with the glasses with her, they could probably have set up a video camera or something like that. But, that, I mean, that kind of takes the fun out of it then.
All right. Okay, yeah. You ready for this? This is the answer. How do I tell if my house is haunted? Someone asked that question. Unfortunately, the only real answer I can give you is you can't. Since there is no hard proof of the paranormal, there is no definitive way to tell if your house is haunted. However, if weird stuff is happening on a regular basis, you might want to start a journal. Record the weird occurrences, noting the time, weather conditions, witnesses present. If you are hearing weird sounds, try to record them. If you are seeing manifestations or objects moving, try to get photographs or video. Write down all the information you can think of about your home, its history, and the weird stuff that has happened there that is definitely not paranormal in origin. For example, if it snows where I live and then warms up quickly, the snow moving off the roof makes an incredible, spooky racket. When you feel you've got a reasonable amount of proof, take your case to some experienced ghost hunters. All right? They will find the journal and prearranged information very helpful in their investigations. All right, now, I have to reveal something. When I was on my junior year from Dickinson, I was in Freiburg, Germany, which is a university town near the Black Forest. The Black Forest is known for ghosts, all right? And I happened to take a course with a gentleman we called Weirdo Bender. He was the world expert in the paranormal. He was a physicist, but still pursued with colleagues at Duke University, where there's a paranormal institute. He studied the paranormal. Now, among the things that we did, we actually set up cameras in houses in the Black Forest that were thought to have a sort of poltergeist-like movement of objects, and we'd watch the objects. And what you'd see is, on occasion, objects would just be sitting there, and it would fall over. Nothing around it, just fall over. Now, then we had to determine whether it was earth movement or whatever it was. We also had a very interesting situation with a bottle inside a house that a few seconds later, was outside and warm. And it just moved from one position to the other. It went clearly up the chimney, down and through. All right, now, that's what was claimed. But we experimented with this by having a paranormal SWAT team composed of a physician, an athlete, a runner, and we actually tested the bottle who could run the fastest to see if it was somehow tricked. There was one unifying factor. Now, unifying factor in all these situations, and that was a young woman around the age of 11, 12, or 13 was somewhere present in the house or in the vicinity. You said your sister was with you. How old was your sister?
She would have been about 10.
Ah! Okay. And was there any, were there any young women in that vicinity?
Youngest probably being 16, 17.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your house?
At my grandparents, not at the time, no. But the story had to do with a little boy.
Ah,
there was
okay.
a little boy involved with kind of the story that I told. He had drowned in a river, and my grandfather had brought him back to the house. And that's what I think I thought I heard running up and down the stairs, and he was with my uncle at the time.
Yes, and all these stories, there was a youth going through puberty, and it usually was a young woman, it could have been a young man, but there was always this change element that was going on, and that heightened, people believe, the spiritual setting of the environment. So this is what we did for a year. It's rather interesting. So, again, there's this a physicist. Now, Jim, I know that you're going in search of your spirit. And you are fascinating. I know that you have to leave, but thanks so much for being with
us.
Thanks
very much for having me.
And we're going to pursue just a few issues here for a second. And thank you. Okay, now let's just continue, if we might, Mike and Jessica. I just want to give one more thing. How do you think you get rid of a ghost if it's in the house? I mean, did you ever attempt to get rid of this ghost?
Well, let me add to this. The people that own the building or that own the restaurant, they are of ethnic background.
Right.
And where they come from, it is just normal to, before they open the restaurant, to have it blessed by their priest and everything else. And, like, that had happened. Everything was okay. And then once her husband had came up and had actually seen the ghost for the first time, like I said, her and I were pretty good friends. She had pulled me aside and told me and had said, you know, Jess, we didn't have the basement blessed. That was the only part of the restaurant that we did not have blessed. And this stuff had gone on for probably 4, 5, 6 months. And then finally got to the point where, I mean, it was very, I mean, people were afraid to be in there, especially by themselves. And so finally they called the priest back to have the basement blessed. And from that day on, I had never seen anything else. I had never felt anything else down in the basement. I had never anything. And this is prior to Mike working
there. What do you think about that?
So I'm not sure after that. But before, I mean, I guess I could go back and ask the actual owners because, like I said, I had left. They had kind of stayed if anything had happened after that. But I know, to my best knowledge, the people that had worked there until I did had not really. Yeah.
Well, the religious element would be clear because, as you could see from the beginning stories about Halloween and the ghosts and the spirits and offering a treat and all of that is linked up. But here's what this guy says. One way to get rid of ghosts is to ask the ghosts out loud to please depart and or cease their activities. Now, did you ever do that in the basement? Did you ever say, please stop, please leave?
No, I've never done that. But we've talked about the ghost, like, you know, leave Henry alone down there and he'll leave you alone.
Yeah, but never directly.
No, never directly, no.
Okay, because this character says, judging by the stories I receive, this is a remarkably effective way of dealing with the issue. You just ask them to leave. The other is, another thing to remember is that not all weird occurrences are of paranormal origin. Regular house sounds, even if you've never heard them before, can be mistaken for paranormal phenomenon. Also, certain real but weird things, such as ball lighting, can be plenty spooky without being paranormal. I know I mention ball lighting a lot in this context because almost everyone has heard of it. Have you heard of ball lighting?
Mm-mm.
Know what that is?
No.
I have no idea what that is. Because I've seen it myself and because this really is a perfect example of a very bizarre natural phenomenon. It must be something where a light gets a glow and starts. Okay. Let us not forget the power of the human imagination. Sometimes humans see or hear things that aren't there. That doesn't mean we're all crazy. It happens to all of us. The human mind is also notorious for filling in details that aren't really there. I once saw something I immediately thought was a ghost on a street I lived on for 3 years. As it turned out, it was a street sign, what I had seen, ignored hundreds of times, that by a really odd twist of light and shadow had been transformed by my mind into a floating apparition of a woman. If I had turned and run away, my first inclination, but it's hard to do that when you're in a passenger seat of a would-be car, I'd have forever thought that I had seen a ghost. However, if these more mundane explanations don't hold any water with you, and or you are feeling seriously harassed, my advice is to call a local ghost hunter. There are plenty of them listed in the ghost hunters section of my Ghostly Links page. Now, what do you think of this idea? We've had the movie, the Ghostbusters, and all that. Any thought? I mean, you said the priest was sort of acting as a ghostbuster there.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes to seeing things, like I said, that the moving of the spoons and the candles being, that didn't convince me that there was a ghost in that place. The feeling is what convinced me. And I think that's, I mean, you know, I could have messed up. I could have flipped the teacups the wrong way. I could have not made sure the candle was blown out, you know, completely, and it fired back up.
Or someone else could have come in and playing your mind. Yeah.
And I agree with that completely. Somebody could have been playing games. Fine. But the feeling, it's pretty hard for somebody to, you know, for something to overwhelm me that much to think that that would be some sort of setup.
What do you think about Ghostbusters?
I think that once that you have that notion in your mind or you experience something like that, it's kind of hard to get away from it. I mean, I know for me that stuff just it scares me. So I mean, even though I've never seen anything down in that basement of the restaurant, every time I went down there, I was looking over my shoulder just because I had some weird kind of feeling. And I don't know if it's because I linked it with all the other stories that I heard and given the environment and the situation I was in, that maybe that's the reason why I felt like that. So as long as nothing truly bad happened to me, then I wouldn't resort to go and get a Ghostbuster or anything like that.
Have any friends who are Ghostbusters?
No.
Well, now here's an interesting thing, though. I was reading some scientists on some of these things, and they have a suggestion that some of the things that you perceive are other entities, such as smells, which is another way, or such as moving air. These are actually projections in a neuroscientific manner of elements that you control. Just a little reference. It says, I've been reading some of the stories that people have submitted to your page. This is to this paranormal website. Having been being a scientifically minded person all my life, I couldn't help reacting to some of the situations that the writers have described by asking myself how such things have happened. For example, some writers have described smelling strange scents when supposed apparitions were about, supposed ghosts. I am familiar with the mechanism by which the brain interprets scent molecules diffuse into the called tectorial membrane in the nasal cavity and activate connections in the brain which are interpreted as scents, but they're not. There's a different impulse there. So in order for the writer to have experienced a scent, this neural pathway in the brain would have to be activated by something. So there is an activation, we're not sure what it is, but then the brain starts to imagine scents when they don't exist.
I could believe that.
And it could be fear.
And I think your body's capable of doing a lot of things that we can't explain, and I think that maybe that has a lot to do with it.
Yeah. Because we actually don't know enough about the brain. We simply don't. And so this is... So this person says, I can't help wondering whether a lot of the experience that people discuss in the stories they submit to your website are manifestations of such neural mechanisms. I have worked with patients myself who experience such sensory experiences as part of the symptoms of their condition. I think this information is worthwhile to mention on your website for those who are not familiar with neuroscience or neuropathology. Obviously a much more secular, mundane way of looking at things. Well now, where do you go from here? What's going to happen with this restaurant? What about this ghost? I mean, has this show tonight encouraged you to go seek it out and tell it to leave?
I don't work there anymore, so.
That's no excuse. That's only an excuse.
I will let the new girls take over. No. And
I'm not in any hurry to go down there.
No, you're not going to go down there?
No, it's just it's one of those places that just invites those kind of atmosphere and that kind of situation I don't particularly like to be in.
But haven't cellars always, basements always encourage fear in people?
Yeah.
Generally.
Yes.
But not most of them are built like this one.
And
I have been, I've been in quite a few creepy places in my life. And if I go to see a scary movie, I jump easy or I may scream. But just to put me somewhere necessarily doesn't usually scare me. And I had returned to the basement numerous times, and even after.
And there was no problem.
No, I left, whenever I finally left the restaurant, I did not leave with a bad feeling or a feeling of being spooked anymore. It was pretty amazing to me. And it's in my head that after the priest had come and blessed the place, for everybody, even the people that had actually seen him, it had changed.
Amazing. Now, let me just finish tonight with one observation. New York Times had an article today that the Brits are very upset with Halloween being introduced into England. And the reason they're upset is they believe that the Americans have commercialized Halloween and all the things we're talking about tonight, the ghosts, the trick-or-treat, the whole element of the mystical is gone as kids just show up and give me candy. Now, what do you feel about this? Do you think Halloween has gotten just too transactional and we've lost some of the things we're talking about tonight? That transition of the evil spirits out the night before to such a case that, of course, many more fundamentalist religions are holding what they call Hell Nights tonight. It's an alternative in which they take people through. This was in USA Today, I think, today. They take people through houses where each room symbolizes a sin. And the people are, it's intended to shock the people going through there so that they'll repent and they will not think of the evil spirits. Now, what do you think about, though, this idea that it's just gotten too transactional? Too much just sweet candy, that's it.
Oh, it definitely is. I think, and primarily what I remember as even a kid is Halloween, is trick-or-treating, of course. Yeah. But
did you go through the actual old thing where where the people would say to you, trick-or-treat, and then you'd have to do something? Or?
Oh, no. We never had to do that. When I was a kid, it was more or less you just knocked on the door and said trick-or-treat, and somebody would hand you candy. And
well, what about the kid who grabs into the bucket himself?
that's what I was going to say.
Chased down the street.
Yeah, exactly.
That happened actually whenever Mike was still in school and we lived right up across in the Klein Center.
You didn't do that, did you?
No.
Yes.
I was trusting enough to say, hey, we got to go out for 5 minutes. Let's just leave the candy on the chair.
And before we even got out of the alleyway,
we saw
three little kids come up and just take the whole bucket and go.
Just gone.
The whole thing.
Wasn't your friends or anything, right?
No. They were little kids.
Little kids?
Yeah. Little kids.
But you know what? I might have done the same thing.
No.
I didn't.
Yeah, that's right. Well, thanks a lot for being with us, taking the time.
Thank you.
And again, we'll see you later. This has been the Bill Durden Show, and now we've covered ghosts, Halloween, and everything in between. Yeah, that rhymes. That won't rhyme. All right. Okay.